Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I am quite overjoyed to be joined today by Mr. Ed Biven, one of our premier judges in the American Kennel Club, and I appreciate your time very, very much.
Pleasure to be here.
Excellent. Now, my research tells me that you started in Pomeranians and moved on to Dobermans when you were married to Irene.
That's right.
And you started in 60s. No. I can't remember the year.
I started in 1952.
Oh, okay. There we go.
I bought the first bitch.
I knew you were 12.
Yeah, I was 12 years old. I have 77 years.
There you go. That's amazing.
So, you know, it's what it is. I bought the family's first purebred dog mm-hmm. to replace an old dog that had died. Mm-hmm. And my dad wouldn't let me spend my money, so I borrowed the money from him.
Oh, my gosh.
Bought the bitch, bred her, and paid him back.
See, I love the part of it. Just is so perfect. The part about how you had a kennel building and you were 12. I'm like, it's just perfect.
I didn't have the kennel building until I was about 14 or 15.
Really?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And when I was 16 years old, I got hit with distemper.
Oh.
And I lost half of the kennel.
Oh my gosh.
And I had 30 bitches. I had 30 dogs in the kennel.
Wow.
Dogs and bitches. I lost 15.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Well, it's hard for a kid.
Yeah.
Hard for a kid to find out ways to pay the vet bill.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And so you came up into dogs and kind of took a break, right, when you went to college a little bit?
Yes, I did. The first year I lived at home, mm-hmm. did not like it. I went to class the second year, mm-hmm. sophomore year, and I went home and my dad said, "How was it?" And I said, "I ate it and I'm not going back." And he said, "Well, what are you going to do?" And I said what I was going to do, and he said, "No, you're not." He said, "You're going back." And he said, "What would it take to make it attractive to you?" And I said, "I want to live on campus." He said, "Fine. You cut down on the dogs, find homes for some of the older dogs, mm-hmm. and we'll keep some of the younger stuff for mm-hmm. you." And they did. They loved the dogs. They just didn't originally have any interest in purebred dogs.
Right. And so, Texas Christian University, yes?
Yep.
And so you graduated from it and then were an administrator.
Yeah. I graduated, was away for 8 years teaching.
Okay.
Came back, started an advanced degree, and ended the first semester, they offered me a job.
There you go.
And a few years later, I had the privilege of serving as vice chancellor.
Yeah.
One of the vice chancellors.
Yeah. For, what, 16 years?
About 16 years.
Yeah. And you and Irene got married?
In 1978.
Okay.
And we were married 30 years when she died.
Yeah. I miss her.
Yeah. She was a neat gal.
She really was.
She was tough.
Yeah. Yeah. She scared me almost as much as you. Okay, so doing my due diligence like a proper student, I found a couple of wonderful interviews from over the years, and one of the ones was with BJ Andrews, and there was a great line in there that I wanted you to talk a little bit about, that when you were out there in the ring, when you're judging dogs, that it is a personal competition of Ed Biven with himself.
That's
right. I loved that quote. So talk about that a little
bit. It always has been. That's one of the reasons that I'm stern. One of the reasons that I'm concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you want to talk about that. Everybody does. You have to remember that I started showing dogs when I was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I started judging when I was 21. Mm-hmm. So these people looked at me with a bit of a sternness about their attitude toward me. And it was like, you know, and that began to soften and to change. But I felt like at 21, and for several years thereafter, and every day I go in, people have spent a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of energy and resource, and they deserve nothing less than my concentration and my attitude. You look at dogs, you give an opinion. Mm-hmm. Somebody else looks at them tomorrow and it's their opinion, but today it's mine. So I compete with myself not to miss a good dog and to sort these classes out correctly per what's intended for the breed through the standard. It's a challenge, but it's not something I take lightly.
Clearly not.
No, I know.
And I think that's one of the things I most admire about you. And I told you this story when I emailed you about this interview. And I love the story, and I'm going to tell it on you, even though people don't want to hear from me. But this is such a great story. Judging a random group of Akitas somewhere in the Northwest half a dozen years ago, and you judged the first day, and it was kind of a, I'm not going to say a motley crew, but it was a mixed bag of type and quality, and none of them looked like each other. And I showed a dog in that group, and over the course of the next few days I kept seeing you at the ring. Why? You already judged these. And I came and I asked you, I said, why in the world are you still here watching these same dogs? And you said that you wanted to make sure you got it right. And that level of student, of study, of care, of interest is, to me, worth a tremendous amount of respect.
Thank you.
And I believe that that shows. So we were talking a little earlier off air. You have the reputation of being stern. We were just talking about it. So I'm pretty sure you made me cry somewhere along the way. It's okay.
It was not my intention.
I'm sure it wasn't. And that's what I want you to talk about. You have too much knowledge to waste for people to be scared of you.
Well, you have to understand that I'm not responsible for how people feel about me.
That's right.
I can't tell you that you're wrong because that's how you perceive me.
Right.
It's kind of like your behavior. You're responsible mm-hmm. for it. Mm-hmm. Your attitude toward Ed Bevin is your responsibility. Mm-hmm. And you can dislike me, you can like me, you can love me, you can respect me. But I must tell you that my parents drilled into me that people who are giving you an opinion must be respected, and that I never want to give you a reason not to respect. So I go in there, and I'm pretty stern. And sometimes, to be very frank with you, you have to understand my parents were not young when I was born. Mm. That in fact, my father was a Victorian.
Oh, my goodness.
So as a result of that, there was a certain amount of rigidity mm-hmm. and attitude about the authority.
Right.
Now, again, I don't control how people perceive me.
What's that thing that they say? What you think of me isn't my business?
Well, it is my business, because if my attitude gets in the way of conveying the message, mm-hmm. then I don't like that.
Okay.
But it's not anything that I've softened.
You have, actually.
It's true. I've mellowed a lot in the years.
It is absolutely true.
And I know that. Mm-hmm. The game has mellowed. It's yeah. not the same. Some people bring you dogs for the same reason that they did 30 and 40 years ago. Some people do not bring you dogs for that reason because they don't understand it.
Right. It's true.
They genuinely don't. Yeah. I'm not being critical. I'm not putting them down. Mm-hmm. I'm simply saying that that is a fact. Now, I know I can walk into a room of 100 people and I threaten half of them without ever opening my mouth. Part of it is an attitude. Part of it is a carriage. Mm-hmm. Part of it is the eye. And I understand that to some degree. I'm very intense mm-hmm. and intent about what I do. Mm-hmm. And some people don't know how to take that.
Right.
But I can't do anything about
no.
it.
No, you sure can't. So let's give people some suggestions, okay? Because we have lots of people that listen to this, so we're going to help
okay.
them. So give me your, I know this, I'm going to let you tell it, your three biggest pet peeves. Don't do this in Ed Bevin's ring.
Well, you don't run with a toy dog.
That's on my list.
You don't pick a dog up.
I'm pretty sure that's what I did to get yelled at.
Well, I don't yell at you. I just speak to you.
I got spoken to.
And, you know, I'm not the only one who
nope.
ever did that.
Nope, absolutely not.
You didn't pick a dog up in Percy's ring if Percy Roberts.
Yes, right.
One of the famous all-rounders. Right. If you did, you don't do it in Maxine's ring.
No. We're going to talk about Maxine
you
in a minute.
You don't do it in my ring.
That's good.
In the first place, it's about dogs. Mm-hmm. And for people to be able to see how I have articulated the class, meaning judged it.
Right?
And that's what judging is. Mm-hmm. You have to leave them down. Because balance and proportion and make and shape cannot be perceived in somebody's arms.
Snuggled.
No, can't do it. So leave them on the ground. Mm-hmm. Plus, a lot of dogs that have a tendency to be a little nervous in the ring, or even a little more severe, a problem, frequently learn more on the floor than they do in your arms. Mm-hmm. They just learn to be timid and protected in your arms. If you put them down, people can see them, they're better off, they learn more, and that's what it's about. Maxine has often said it's not a pet show. And I take Percy's statement, which was, they want it on the ground, leave them on the ground.
Very good. Bait.
Oh, it's overdone today, too. It's just pitiful. Yeah, I mean, you can't even see these dogs in many instances because they're poking this bait. We don't feed dogs in the ring. You feed them in a pan somewhere.
Thank you. I completely agree with you. I just wanted to hear you say it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not bashful about
it. No.
You know, that's another thing. That you go back to the Bivin temperament.
The mean Ed.
Yeah. I am shy, very shy. But I'm not timid.
No, sir.
And I think that kind of says a lot about it.
Tight leads.
Well, what is appropriate? You show some dogs on a loose lead because that's what the standard calls for. I'm becoming a little bothered by this business of a lead.
Way up here.
What held way up here over the handler's head. And then they expect the dog to get the message down the lead, and the lead, the wire is too long for the dog to get a message.
That's a beautiful, I love that. Yes.
So bring the lead down where you can send a message to the dog. The dog knows who's in control, which is part of the battle too. And just don't do that. I mean, don't do it.
Beautiful. Okay. Good ones. So that's good. So this is how we keep Ed happy. These pay attention.
Well, pardon me. It's not how you keep Ed happy. It's how you keep your relationship to the dog to demonstrate the dog at best advantage.
Perfect. Perfect. So your mentors.
Yep.
Maxine.
Yep. Well, I have to go back to the beginning.
Okay. Maxine is the one I know. So... Sure.
I will just tell you that there were two women in Pomeranians who helped me immensely as a kid. One of them was a woman by the name of Mrs. C.A. Ellis, from whom probably, I don't know if anyone knows her today or not.
She'd be 100. I don't know the name.
But she bred and worked at Pomeranians very hard. I bought my first bitch from her.
Okay.
Another woman who really is a dear woman in my memory of the thing was a woman whose name was Mrs. E.J. McDougall. Who never was as successful as some of the others, but they started me in Pomeranians. Okay. Mrs. McDougall introduced me to the Fort Worth Kennel Club, and I was a very young member. So that was an early one.
Mm-hmm.
Lee and Beulah Murray.
Okay.
Lee Murray was an Aubrey judge at one point before he died. He taught me things. I can't tell you how much Herman Cox taught me.
Really?
Yeah, Herman was. Yeah. A mentor and a dear friend, even though there was a lot of age difference. But he and his wife were wonderful to me. But the two figures that are probably attributed, maybe blamed.
Blamed.
More than any of it, were, of course, Maxine and Annie.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I fell into that particularly. Maxine, I still see. Maxine is...
How's she doing? I haven't seen her in a while.
She's fine.
She's okay.
She's wonderful.
I adore her.
But her attitude and her temperament is much like Ed Bivin's.
Yes, it is.
So,
yes,
you know,
it is.
I don't know if she ever made him cry.
No, she never made me cry. I don't know.
Yeah. But she was a wonderful teacher and a wonderful basic dog person.
Right. Dogs first.
Yeah. And it's about dogs with me.
Mm-hmm. It has to be.
It's not about people. And then, of course, Annie taught me a lot about breeds, too. And Annie taught me about other things, you know, and Maxine did, too. Maxine showed dogs for me, as well as being a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I drove for a lot. Right. We traveled together.
Right.
Annie and I never did really do that, but we talked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I was never afraid of Annie and never intimidated by her. and she could intimidate easily.
She could.
But in recent years, those two people that these people might know about were those two. Right. But I have to be honest with you. I had a spongy mind as a kid, and still do.
Right.
To the point that it's oxymoronic, but you can mentor yourself.
Watch and learn?
You bet. You bet.
That's how I learn almost everything.
Watch and learn. And I read the language. And I don't read as much as I used to.
Somebody made a really interesting comment today, actually, when I said I was going to do this interview, how impressed they were. You had a small entry and a small breed, and you went back to check your standard on something, and that they were so impressed that in this tiny entry, in this random breed, you took the time to go and look. And it goes back to the same question of...
But you see, you've used two terms. You've used random and small. And those breeds and those representatives who were shown not in large numbers were just as important to those people as an entry of 100.
Right. That was the comment that they were so impressed by.
And that's the way I feel. Mm-hmm. That's part of that business of obligation to them and to self.
Mm-hmm. And to the sport.
That's them.
Okay.
That's the, you know, to all of us.
Right, right.
Because you say you will judge by the standard. If you have any question, go look at it. And I had a question, not about whether it was right or wrong, but about the acceptable degree.
Interesting. Okay.
How things are stated in standards sometimes are a little bit...
hinky.
A little difficult. So you go look. I have a tendency to take standards literally.
Yes.
If it says none of this, I don't want any of it.
Good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I also try desperately to be cognizant of why a standard says a breed should be what?
That form and function thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is another one I think is important for people to know about. You always ask the dog's age.
Evaluating livestock.
Yes.
We are one of the few animal sports that does not divide young stock by age to the degree that others do.
Right.
We do it generally on either 6 or 3 month increments, depending on whether it's an all breed or a specialty. And I still think that it is important to know whether the livestock that you are looking at, the breeding stock, is closer to the minimum age or closer to the maximum age. Because animals change very quickly in short periods of time.
Very much so. I also, in another interview that I was doing my research, you were talking about that you were in favor of the concept of not having dogs finish their championships until they're after 18 months.
Still in favor of it.
And I thought that was interesting, and I wanted to hear your talk about that.
I think we cure many ills in regard to the quality of animals that we reward with championships. If we had a minimum age, you ought to be able to go up to a certain point below that age. But the final leap should be, in my opinion, after that period. Some people say it should be 18. Some people think it should be 24.
And this is a common thing in Europe and in other countries.
In many countries.
Right.
You can't get the final point. Well, in some, you can't even get points.
Right.
Until. But certainly, you can't. Consequently, if you can't get it until the minimum age, you can't get the final one.
Right. And do you think this would encourage people to stay longer in the sport? Like somebody comes with their first dog, it's finished at 9 months. What are they going to do then?
That is something that I battle in my head almost daily, is how in today's world and society being what it is, do you satisfy those people who want instant gratification, so to speak, in relationship to the welfare of the sport. You see, I'm one of those old guys who is traditional enough and dedicated enough, in my opinion. Maybe I shouldn't say that. To really believe in the importance of breeding stock in breeds. I still do. And I don't care if you've got one or 100. That should be the purpose all the way through.
which is a good segue, actually, to one of the things I wanted to talk about, and I know I've seen you and I've heard you talk about this before, generic dogs. What does that really mean to you when you hear generic dogs, and how do you apply that to what you see in the ring?
Okay, in the first place, the term generic generally means general.
Right.
And all of these breeds have hallmarks, things that are particular and peculiar unto them. The absence of hallmarks or things that make them different is as big a problem as we have in dogs. The people who think every breed moves the same make a big mistake, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. If you think every head should be basically the same, every eye, every this, every that, you have to know, to circumvent generalism, generic, you have to know the things that make them different. You have to know why bulldogs should not have a flat top line. You have to know why certain feet are built a certain way to do a certain job.
Right.
Not every dog stands on the same foot. Not every dog has the same kind of foot. And you say, well, those things are not important as long as they're the right color and they've got hair on them and they do whatever. No, it is important. A woman said to me today, in essence said, I've not seen that checked for in years. Or I never see a judge today do that. Mm-hmm. Hallmark of the breed.
That's scary.
I don't like generalization. A dear friend of mine, whom I loved dearly, she used to say, it may not be a great Pomeranian or a poodle or Doberman or whatever, but boy, it's a show dog. And my statement was, since when did we have a breed called show dogs? The quality of being a show dog should be incorporated in those dogs that are true to their standard, but is not the horse that should drive the cart.
And that's what I was hoping to talk about, because I think, and you've said it, too many people are too focused on the flash and not enough on the substance.
And you see these, as I detest the overbaiting at the wrong time and rewarding bad behavior, unacceptable in the ring, the business of taking every dog at the same pace, running around the ring with a toy dog, a bulldog, a Frenchie, all those things, is not appropriate. And it's because people don't stop to think, what job were they doing?
Okay, so education. We're doing some education here, which is a good thing. So for new folks coming in, how do they get knowledge? Where do they start?
Well, the American Kennel Club, to its credit, has facilitated access to information which is provided by more than one source. Mm-hmm. By the Kennel Club, certainly by the breed clubs, and that kind of thing. The breed clubs generally do a decent job of providing information. They don't know you want it until you ask for it. So part of the process is self-education and seeking information. I remember as a little kid, and I wasn't a little kid, I was a teenager, I generally knew who was successful in a breed. And if I were at a dog show and showed at 8 o'clock and got through, or wasn't going to show till 3 o'clock or whatever, I still went to a dog show. And I was this spongy little kid who would go get a Lang Scarta and say, come teach me about Shepherds. Or I'd get Herman Cox and I'd say, teach me about Dachshunds. Or I'd see these guys looking at a breed and I would think, I wonder what's going on in there. So I'd go stick my nose into it, stand and listen to what they had to say. Mm-hmm. And watch.
Watch.
And ask questions.
I love to watch people trim.
Yeah. Check.
I love it.
But you see, I was shy, but I wasn't timid. Mm-hmm. So I would say, which is the best head? Which is the best this or that? Mm-hmm. And I would listen to what they had to say. So education is not easy. But the main thing that I have to say about that is that you pay a price for education. It takes time and energy. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't come quickly.
And it doesn't ever end.
And it never ends. I told somebody that today. But if I can't learn something every day, what am I doing here? I will go back to the hotel frequently, and I'll think about something, and I may get the standard out and look again.
Same as going back to that Akita ring.
Doesn't bother me. It's part of the process. A man was on the board at the Kennel Club for years, or for a long time. His name was Fred Jacobberger. He was from Kansas City or Omaha or somewhere like that. And I remember having, as a kid, after I got one breed, I think Fred said to me, "Are you going to want anything else?" I mean, meaning additional breeds.
Mm-hmm.
As time went on, I said, "I don't know. You know, I'm a kid in school, and tuition is not cheap, and I work, and I go to school, and I have my dogs, and whatever." He said, "Well, always remember that it's an educational process." He said, "When you go to college or university, you're not guaranteed you're going to graduate." He said, "But you still invest to get the knowledge."
It's good. I like that. That's very good. Well, Ed, thank you very, very much. I know it's been a very long day for you. Long 4-day dog
I've
show.
I enjoyed it.
Good. Good. It's a cute little show.
I appreciate the privilege of talking about dogs.
I appreciate the privilege of you joining us.
Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.